Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast. You know about First Take, but what about First Take, Her Take? Now, this is a brand new podcast hosted by Charlie Arnold, Kimberly Martin, and Chinne Agumike. They discuss and debate the biggest sports stories and have conversations about their lives as well as culture. This week, they're chatting with Robin Roberts of Good Morning America. Download and subscribe to First Take, Her Take, as well as The Right Time, wherever you get your podcast. Also, Stephen A's World streams weekdays on ESPN Plus, bringing fans Stephen A. Smith's entertaining perspective and deep expertise with signature guests. The best interviews with Stephen A's World are now available as a podcast every Wednesday. Listen wherever you get your podcasts and watch Stephen A's World on ESPN Plus. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, we're going to talk a little bit about All-Star Weekend, talk about what happened with Les Miles at Kansas, and we're going to get somebody to explain this NBA Top Shot thing, because I know damn well half of y'all don't understand, because I don't understand half of it. But first... All right, Gabe, Dak Prescott finally got his money. It was very interesting. Like, all this stuff that had gone on throughout all this time with Dak Prescott and his contract. The one thing I knew for certain was that he was going to get his money, right? The one thing I knew pretty much the whole way was the Cowboys were going to extend his contract. I understand in large part why people were skeptical of the idea that this was going to happen. And I really think that a significant part of that skepticism just came because he's black. Right. Like, I think the people were operating on the assumption that they're going to do the black dude wrong at some point, because they're always looking for a reason to not do the black dude right in these circumstances. Right. Like, if Dak Prescott is a white quarterback in the same situation, nobody's questioning whether or not he is ultimately going to get an extension. Like, I firmly believe that. I also think that some of the skepticism that people had about Dak and how good of a player he was also came down to him being black, because that's just how we do this, even when we don't realize it. But you ain't just going to go out on the street and get another Dak Prescott. And the Cowboys are in a win-now situation and have been in a win-now situation for a while. What were they going to do? Trade up in this draft and go get somebody else? What were they going to do? Pick up some dude off of waivers? What were they going to do? Go get Marcus Mariota or something like that and try to bring him in? No. They've got an absolutely top 10 quarterback in the league. Some could argue a top 5 quarterback in the league. In the last full season that he played, he was a top 5 quarterback by performance. In the league, there wasn't no way that Dallas was going to let him go. And you could peep it in the interviews that the Cowboys were doing the whole time. But Stephen Jones is like, yeah, Dak has all the leverage. Have you ever heard of a situation involving a contract negotiation where somebody ever said that out loud? Ever? Like, yeah, the other guy's got all the leverage, right? I personally have never seen anything like that before myself. I can't think of it, right? But he did have all the leverage. And this wasn't like the Kirk Cousins situation, because they're like, the Kirk Cousins had all the leverage over Washington. Sorta. He had all the leverage over them if they wanted to keep him. They did not want to keep him. The Cowboys clearly wanted to keep Prescott. And you know that they wanted to keep Prescott, because the holdup that they had in this negotiation wasn't as nearly as much about money as it was about the length of the deal. Dak wanted to be able to get out sooner in order to hit him for another lick. And it seemed like Jerry was like, yo, I'm okay with you hitting for this one lick, but like, can we just like hold off on lick number two? Like we can't do that? No. So Dak played it like he wanted it. I saw something from Jane Slater of the NFL Network, whom you guys may know for something else. She had sent a tweet out in 2019 that said that the Cowboys were offering Dak $30 million a year, but Dak wanted $40 million a year. Now, I don't know if he actually wanted a full $40 million a year at the time, right? But that was what she put out there. She, you know, she's a reporter. She's sourced around the Cowboys. So I'm assuming there's something to what she was talking about, right? And maybe, who knows, maybe the Cowboys are trying to make Dak seem greedy by putting out the $40 million a year. But I do think that people who are making the argument that the Cowboys blew this because they could have had him for $30 million a year and now they got to pay him $40 million a year. No, I don't think Dak was ever going for the $30 million a year program. I don't think that was ever something that he wanted. He was going for this. Now, the Cowboys, in the end, if in 2019, keeping in mind that 2019 was the last year of Dak's contract, right? So that Slater report I'm giving you is before the 2019 season. Okay. At the end of 2019, Prescott's contract was up. The Cowboys wanted to hold him down for 5 years at the end of that contract, which would have been from 2020 to 2024. The Cowboys now have Dak Prescott under contract until 2024. Like, they got the length of the deal that they wanted. They paid him last year, I want to say, like $31 million or something like that, which is coming below the $40 million a year that he is getting right now. This is roughly about the going rate for a guy as good as Prescott. It's probably more than the going rate, but about. I'm just saying, the Cowboys did not get got in the way that I think a lot of people want to make it seem as though they got. They probably could have got some savings along the way, but probably not savings that are actually going to matter. Like, never mind the fact that the Cowboys print money. That salary cap is going to be down in 2021, but it's going to jump in 2022 because they're about to get these new TV deals in there, and then the money comes through from that. So, like, paying Dak Prescott this much money, it ain't going to be that big a thing. I tell you this, though. This, to me, is the lesson to learn for NFL teams when it comes to Dak's deal. You can't franchise tag your quarterback if you actually want to keep him. Like, you're not going to be able to win if you franchise tag your quarterback, right? Now, for those of you who don't quite know how the franchise tag works, every year an NFL team is allowed to pick one player and deem that player as a franchise player and effectively stop that player from becoming a free agent, right? But in return for stopping that player from becoming a free agent, you have to pay that player either the average salary of the top five players by salary at that position or 120% higher than what that player was being paid the previous year, okay? And so what happens is you franchise tag a dude once. Got it, all right? But that second time, you're going to be in that 120% range. And so that $31 million franchise tag turns into a $37 million franchise tag the next year. And then that $37 million franchise tag jumps up if you got to do it again, which means that if you're trying to negotiate with that guy for a long-term contract, they starting on the baseline of what that next franchise tag is going to look like. That's where they go. Now, again, like I said, with Washington and Kirk Cousins, they decided that they didn't want to keep him. So they were willing to pay the money they paid him for him to be a placeholder, but they had absolutely no intention of signing him as a long-term option. The Cowboys knew Dak was their long-term guy. Okay, in that case, you can't franchise tag him. Because at some point, that leverage is going to shift. And if you don't believe me that at some point that leverage is going to shift, hey, man, we watched Dak Prescott's leg break in like 69 places. And he still got his money. Now, who knows? Maybe you wind up in a situation where you got a dude that's less like Dak Prescott and more like Carson Wentz, where you ultimately determine that you don't want to keep that guy and maybe you win out in the end. But if you know that you got your guy, then you're just going to go ahead and sign him to an extension on the front end. Now, the next part of this that I think is interesting is looking at other quarterbacks. I mean, why not just play this out to the tag if you can? Like, I understand why dudes want to hurry up, jump on, and get that money while the money's secure. Like, you're trading on your body for a living. There's always a chance that something can happen. I understand, like, that you want that security. But as a quarterback in your, like, mid-20s, there really aren't that many injuries that are going to do it to you like that. Like, that are just really going to shut you down to where they're like, oh my God, I can't believe this. There really aren't that many of them. So, Deshaun Watson, okay? And this is part of why whatever happens with Watson happens. I don't really have a great deal of sympathy for him. He made the play less than a year ago to sign the extension. The money was in front of him. I think he's getting like $39 million a year or something like that off the deal. But the money was in front of him, and he decided to go ahead and take the money and work the rest out from there and then try to get himself out of there. But the Texans are looking around at this like, yo, we got a deal for how many years? We ain't got to do this. This happened like on a lesser scale when a couple of years ago, Julio Jones wanted to try to renegotiate his contract with 3 years left. Nah, we're not doing that. Otherwise, you would have a line full of dudes every time they decide they want to raise, showing up and getting one. Like, I don't blame the Texans for not being willing to do this thing with Watson just because, hey, man, you just said you wanted to be here for a long time. Watson would not be in the situation that he's in if he hadn't signed that extension. I think he would have had a much better chance of being able to get out of there if he had not signed the extension. Now, to be fair on this one, actually, no, let's do the math on this. Watson got drafted in 2017, right? 17, 18, 19, 20. This would be the fifth year of his deal. Yeah, he'd be out of there after this year. Like, if Watson didn't have all that time on his contract, something tells me he'd be willing to grin and bear it for another year and get out of there. But I understand why he took the extension. But I'm looking at all these quarterbacks here. If you get to a place where that team is staring down the tag, you're winning. You're not like these other players at these other positions where they're just like, cool, we'll just go get somebody else. They might not be as good as you, but we can get somebody else. There aren't 32 somebodies to play quarterback in the NFL. They can't just go get somebody else. And even if they decide they want to go get somebody that's younger, you're turning the clock back on what your team is going to be. So I wonder with a lot of these guys, like as this goes, how many of them are going to be willing to play it out to get to the tag? Because every passing day put Dak in a stronger position. And the way I've read these negotiations from the Cowboys and the ways they've handled it, this doesn't seem like a situation where the Cowboys are trying to be greedy. It seemed like a situation where Dak Prescott was trying to get every single dime he could. And the mechanics of it allowed him to get every single dime that he could get. And he got it. Gay, that dude, you see how much money he getting in the first year?
Isn't it over 50 mil?
75!
Unbelievable.
In the first year, he's getting $75 million. Now, look, I understand where everybody comes from when they talk about the problems with the salary structure in the NFL. I think you're largely wrong in the way that you discuss it, just because there will never be guaranteed contracts in the NFL. There honestly probably should never be guaranteed contracts in the NFL. And if they were, what would happen is players would make a lot less money. Like, there's a risk calculus involved for the players. There's a risk calculus involved for the owners. Everybody's got to get that thing figured out. But what happens for players in football that doesn't happen in any other sport, to account for the fact that they can't really guarantee your contract, what you can get is upfront money. At the time of signing, when he puts his signature on the deal, they're going to give Dak Prescott $66 million. In 1 year, $75 million in a state that don't got no state income tax. Can you imagine looking up and that direct deposit from the $66 million has come in? Can you imagine that?
I'm still waiting for my second check.
Yeah. Stay me on the way, baby. Stay me on the way. Let me tell you a story. When I was in graduate school, I did an internship at a major corporation in Atlanta, right? And so I had a degree. And when you have a degree and you intern, they pay you like you have an MBA. Okay. So this is 2002. And my salary was $5,400 a month. And I remember I got my first check. And my first check was for a week of work. And it was for $1,000. Okay? I ain't never seen no paycheck for no $1,000. Right? A week paycheck, no less. And I remember I looked at that check. And I looked at my daddy. And I'll never forget what I said to him. I now understand how it is that people sell out. That was over $1,000. $1,000. We talking about $66 million. All right? $66 million. Now, I'm going to pull back the curtain for you just a little bit here, right? Every now and then, in the way different like things can go with like various kinds of negotiations and stuff like that, you know, I have been fortunate enough to receive some like sizable upfront payments, like tax refunds type of things. Okay. And it really doesn't go much different than it goes for everybody else. You send those people your route number, your account number, and then one day they pay you, and like it's payday or whatever it is, and then it comes in. But you don't necessarily know what day that thing gonna come in, and then you just look down at your account, and it might be like a pretty big amount that happens to be there. But can you imagine that amount being the after tax from $66 million? Like, I could be wrong here, and I don't know what account Dad get his money sent to, but I imagine that if your account all of a sudden got like $39-40 million in it in a single hit, I feel like the bank go put in some calls and be like, are we sure this isn't an error? Yeah, no, like, I'll be real with you about this. Like, this is what happens when you get a little money, man. You go to the bank. They do call me Mr. at the bank. Like, that literally does happen after they get up on a little bit of game. But like, when I first started working at ESPN and I had to go to the bank for something, them cats couldn't believe it. They looking at me and they're like, yeah, so Disney, what do you do there? And look, this ain't the biggest money they've ever seen at the bank. They just couldn't believe it was mine. You know what I'm saying? But like, imagine if you don't know nothing about football and Dak Prescott walks up and was like, hi, I'd like a cashier's check. And then they pull it up and you just got $40 million the other day. And you just got it sitting there.
There isn't like a special lounge at the bank, a special area for folks of that caliber.
I kind of feel like there should be, to be perfectly honest. Like, they deserve it. You know, like, that's actually an interesting thing, is that the bank is largely powered by rich people, but they ain't really got nothing in there to serve them. Like, when you go to the Rolex store and buy a Rolex, while they filling out the paperwork, they bring you a glass of champagne. You know what I'm saying? That's what they trying to do. Ain't no champagne at the bank. They got they don't treat a cat like Dak Prescott at the branch with the proper level of respect. Now, when he goes to like corporate, they dropping balloons. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's a big deal. They probably got his picture in the lobby and all of that. $66 million at one time, $75 million in a year. And when he's 31, Gabe, he gonna go hit him for another lick. Another lick. Like, this is the other part too that got me about the way that people like approach this with Prescott and like whether he's worth the money or da-da-da. When Kirk Cousins got his money, which by the way was $84 million guaranteed. When Kirk Cousins got his money, all anybody talked about was leverage and good for him because he had the leverage. When it came to Dak, it was a matter of like, I don't know, should you really do this, da-da-da, so forth and so on. Kirk Cousins is not as good as Dak Prescott, and I heard a whole lot more about whether you can build a capable team around Dak Prescott than I heard about whether you can build one of those around Kirk Cousins, right? Like, people were just like, yo, good for Kirk Cousins. You've got all the leverage. We weren't talking about it that way with Dak. We kind of were, but we weren't really talking about it in that way. Matt Stafford stayed getting extension after extension, all the money in the world, never been as good as Dak Prescott. Never, never in the national media was his game nitpicked in the way that people had tried with Prescott to try to explain why it is that he shouldn't have got this money, even though there was never another option for the Cowboys other than to give him this money. And you want to know a big reason why there wasn't ever no other option for the Cowboys than to give him this money? After he carried that damn water for Jerry over the social justice stuff, they better have paid him. You remember that? Like, when all that stuff shook out and they brought it to Dak and they're like, Dak, man, your people out here trying to burn it down. He's like, hey, that's just half my people. You know, he was out there on that, but he was the one riding with Jerry and standing for the anthem and everything else, right? And I didn't knock him nearly as much as a lot of people did, because at that point, he didn't have any money. Like, he was making less than $1 million a year as a starting quarterback. He didn't have the money. He didn't have the flex. He didn't have the power. He kind of had to ride with what Jerry was doing. There wasn't much other option for him. But if they hadn't paid him after he did that, whoo, boy, I'd have been furious. Furious, I tell you. Furious. 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 But here he is now, man. He's got the money. He is the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys for the foreseeable future. He got a deal the length of the deal that he wanted, because, again, this is where the Cowboys and not having that leverage came into play. They could not put their foot down all the way to the end about the 5 years. They had to try. Like, I don't begrudge them at all or blame them for trying, you know? And it'll be interesting to see also how this affects the money that everybody else is going to get, right? Like, by my math, the next two quarterbacks that are going to be up for these big deals, Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson. Baker Mayfield's up for a deal, but his deal ain't really got nothing to do with what we talk about here. Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson. I'm not sure they're going to get deals quite as big as Prescott's because they don't have the same leverage. They're not in the same place. And because I think that the assumption generally is, okay, so we got a new big contract that's been signed and that next big contract is going to be bigger than the one that's before. Kind of. Aaron Rodgers signed a contract extension after Kirk Cousins got $84 million guaranteed and Aaron Rodgers got $78 million guaranteed. Now, I always thought the Vikings were dumb because I thought Cousins had leverage over Washington. He didn't have leverage over them, right? Like Washington was going to have to start from the franchise tag number when it came time to pay him. Minnesota didn't tag him. They weren't going to be the ones that had to do that, you know? But the leverage game is different. So I think those guys are going to get big deals. They'll probably be in the neighborhood, but I don't think it's a guarantee that the deals that they get are going to be the size of Prescott's because they just don't have what Dak had at that time. They just didn't have it. So good for him, man. People are like, now, so he's been paid all that money, now there's going to be pressure to win the Super Bowl. Yeah, because it's not like there's ever been pressure to win the Super Bowl before when you're the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys. No, nobody was worried about that before he got paid. They could pay him $4.75 an hour when there's going to be pressure to win the Super Bowl. You know, this is it. And look, he's gotten good. I think there's another part of this that gets lost for a lot of people. He has gotten really, really, really good. Like, this is not some average quarterback. This is not some dude that you can get another one of these, like, readily. Just go find somebody else. Nah, man. He's the dude. He's the dude that's the front of this franchise. And this isn't a small deal, man. A black dude is unequivocally the face of the Cowboys, the quarterback of the Cowboys. That's never happened before. We've never had that, you know? So good for him. And I don't really give a damn about Jerry. He's still going to be rich. Jerry made all that money off of that damn the electricity in Texas. Least he can do is get some of it to Dak. Gabe, did you watch any of the All-Star festivities or were you and the missus watching Harry and Meghan?
With Harry and Meghan, I was definitely watching and then I was also reading after the fact. We've talked about this in years past. The All-Star game, as it doesn't really have the juice it had, at least what I feel like when I was growing up.
I'm in the other place. I love the All-Star game every year. I see things that I will never see otherwise. I see guys playing together who I will never see play together on the same team. Like, it ain't no great deal of defense and all of that stuff right there, but like, we still see like pretty incredible stuff. I want to get to the All-Star game, but I will make a brief stop in on Harry and Meghan. I just want to make sure that some of y'all are okay. And I say that because apparently some of you learned something that really shocked you. Somehow you just found out that the royal family might be some racist snobs. Really? You don't say. You wow, this is pretty amazing. Like, I know Oprah wasn't as shocked as she pretended to be, but I was stunned how many people, or maybe they were just performing for the internet. The level of surprise at the idea that the royal family was concerned about how dark that child was going to be. Right now, I did think that the stuff like not giving the kid security and saying he can't be a prince, that was a little bit much, right? I do agree about that. That was probably a bit much. And it tells you the blood ties only matter but so much. They're more loyal to being white than they are to being part of their own families. White is their real family, right? They're nuclear, not nuclear, but you know, that family, the Windsors, right? That family structure, that matters to keep the rest of y'all out, right? But the real team is Team White. And they were afraid, you know, that this is going to mess up and not be Team White. They ain't trying to make no Othello sequel or nothing like that over there with them people. OK, however, this is where I thought people were being wildly dishonest about the world. And this is people of all races. OK, I am willing to bet those of you in interracial relationships that have procreated in those relationships, a black person, and it ain't even necessarily got to be a white person, right? But a white person in particular, if you think that nobody on that white side of that family has been wondering how dark that baby's going to be, you're crazy. Like, this isn't uncommon at all. That from the royal family was not an outlier opinion. And I will take it another step further. Okay. If this were the Prince of Ghana and he had married a white woman, it'd be a whole lot of people hoping, wishing, praying that that child turned out as light-skinned as possible. And every single one of y'all know that that's true. Every one of you knows that that's true, right? Like, skin shade bias is far too prevalent in this world for y'all to pop up and act so surprised that of all people, the royal family would be a bit worried about how dark that child was going to be, right? Now, I don't blame Black people for what I'm talking about here per se, but a whole lot of Black people spend a whole lot of time rooting for their kids to be as light as possible. But you're going to act like you can't believe it when the royal family feels the same way. Like, this is just far too broad of a problem and far too broad of an issue for y'all to get on the damn internet performing, acting like you can't believe that they was worried about that. Come on, man. Now, granted, I do also understand this, that very often in these cases that people worry about how dark the baby's going to be because what's going to happen when your husband finds out. But in this case, they knew who the daddy was. Therefore, it was not like such a thing. Gabe, why you cover your face? You know what I'm talking about. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? Like, everything's all hunky-dory. Next thing you know, the delivery room look like they about to shoot the cover for Notorious B.I.G.'s Ready to Die. Then all of a sudden, everybody got questions. You know what I'm saying? Like, but no, like, that's the thing. Skin tone. This is a thing, and it matters so much more than people want to recognize, the real economic outcomes that come from it, everything else. And I just felt like everybody acting like that was the pinnacle of racism, and particularly talking about white people, acting like, oh my God, I just can't believe they cared that that child was dark. Why you think I don't know none of y'all? I'm not saying all of y'all kick it that way, but why you act like I don't know none of y'all? None of y'all. Like, hey, let me tell you something. I don't know how many, like, immediate or close family members that you have that have made the decision to engage in a relationship with a Black person. I'm just here to tell you, that's a great way to learn a lot about your family that you may not have known. It happens, you know? That was my read. Like, I don't give a damn about the royal family. Like, I just don't care. I'm not going to judge you guys so much for caring. I will judge you for this, though. Why are you seeking out Piers Morgan's opinion? He ain't even over here no more. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was bad enough when he might pop up on your American television station. Now y'all going out of y'all way after this, knowing that he's going to say something that makes you mad. Like, after the interview happened, a whole lot of people are like, man, I got to go over here and see what the Brits are saying about this. You know exactly what the Brits are going to say about this.
That was it for me. The level of surprise. And then also the thought that this was going to somehow, like, bring down the monarchy. It's like, this is a colonial empire.
Yes.
This is known about them.
Yes.
Doesn't make it any less wrong or horrible, but it's not surprising, right?
Yeah, I actually found all of this stuff that we were talking about there to be, like, the most ordinary behavior possible, right? There was nothing royal about this. Poor people do this, right? Middle-class people do this. All of this. It was just, like, this was just media. Like, I think for white people, this is the trick y'all got to stop trying to play on me, okay? Racism is not an outlier condition. The racists are not the rare ones. The anti-racist is rare. The racist is everywhere. And even people who you would not describe as being dyed-in-the-wool racist were capable of some of the stuff that they were talking about there. Like a whole lot of these people who were like, I can't believe this. Kicking it, not the exact same in their regular lives, but kicking it very, I can't believe they said that Meghan Markle was difficult at work. Saying the same damn thing about somebody at your job.
Yes, exactly. It was kind of like, oh man, I can't believe the Brits are so racist. It's like, have you seen your fellow countrymen?
Yeah, where do you think they got it from? Where do you think this started? They the OGs. What do you mean? Like, that was my whole thing. What do you mean? Why are we acting like this? Like, just, yeah, say it's bad or whatever. But people were acting just so floored and so shocked. And I'm just like, who did you think these people were? Look at how they treated Diana Spencer. And she was just a regular white person.
It's like I've seen The Crown.
I haven't seen The Crown. They not the first white folks I done ever met, man. I know quite a few. Like, my favorite. Wow, we haven't even gotten to the All-Star game yet. But one of my favorite, like, racial observations about the Harry and Meghan thing. And by the way, Harry, you're an interesting dude, right? But even he don't want to say that the UK is racist. Because white folks just can't bring themselves to acknowledge that thing because they know racism is bad. You could list all the things that make somebody racist and they might agree that they are all of those things, but then just try to say they're not racist, right? Because the tag is the problem that you wind up with. But my favorite thing about Harry and Meghan as it relates to race was, like, there's this whole cottage industry of, you know how black folks are. you know how black folks are, right? All kinds of things. And it always winds up being like the most simple, mundane things that very often make it clear to me that y'all just don't know any white people, or you just don't have meaningful relationships with white people in your lives. And I don't even necessarily blame you for that, right? Because this is America. I understand how these things go. Like, one of the great privileges I've had is, for whatever reason, I have grew up with some like pretty intimate relationships with white people in ways. Like, if you really look back at it, like your white friends from school, how many of the houses did you ever go in and stuff like that? You know, those kinds of things, right? I know white folks, right? Like, I can do that. I know black people, Sketch with Chappelle. Like, I know a lot of white folks, and not just white folks that I met after I was successful, which then skews your opinion of what it is that white folks are and white folks do. But that's the whole industry. You know how black folks are. Like, you see people, like you see on Twitter, I don't know why black people, rather than putting 1 minute, 30 seconds on the microwave, always hit the 30 second button 3 times. You think there ain't no white people who do that? Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like, you think there ain't no white people who do this? Like, people think that anything that black people do, as though we're some of this otherworldly species, is always just very particular to being black, you know? But, mentioned Chappelle, like, in the realm of comedy, we could kind of have fun with it and be like, it's something like this. Oh, but you know how black people gonna do, right? Like, Coming to America, for example. The Royal Engagement. Get your Royal Engagement t-shirts. Because that's the thing. We gonna have an event. It's gonna be black folks out there selling shirts. Which, by the way, is not entirely about us, but we are more diligent in our t-shirt entrepreneurial goals or whatever it is, all right? But Harry married Meghan Markle, and Meghan Markle, her mama is black, her daddy is white, and she has kind of been one of these identify as biracial types, like not identify as black, which, I mean, good luck with that, but, you know. Anyway, I don't know if you noticed this, Gabe, but like after she got on with Harry and all that stuff started popping, all the things that people would stereotypically expect black people to do to embarrass everybody in front of the world, it was all her white family that was doing that. Like, one of her kinfolk, I can't remember if it was a brother or a cousin, tried to promote a strain of weed around her getting married. It was called Markle Sparkle. Now, that is at the top of the, you know, how black folks is list or something. It was all the white folks that was acting up and acting bad and looking low class and everything else. And I'm like, I don't understand why more comedians didn't do something with this. Maybe I need to go to a comedy club and put that one on the road myself, you know, before we get to that. That was what was funny to me about them. But anyway, y'all enjoyed the interview. 17 million people watched it. 17 million people watched it. And you know why? That ain't because of the royalty part, man. That's all race. That is all race. If there's a white woman who had married Harry and she had some beef with the family and they wound up rolling out or whatever, it ain't no 17 million Americans tuning in to watch that. This is all because people are just still really fascinated by interracial relationships.
Tuning in to be shocked.
Yeah. Yeah, they wanted to hear about how their Guess Who's Coming to Dinner story went. And all of that stuff. Like, that is the power of race. And when you put race and sex together, and then race and sex and money, and then race and sex and the aristocracy, and it all comes together like that.
And Oprah.
And, oh, I forgot. And Oprah. I tell you this, though. Wait till somebody bring, like, a black dude in there. And I don't mean no black dude. Not, like I don't, like, Meghan Markle. No, I ain't talking about that black dude. I'm talking about, like, a black dude. Like, show up in there with string of bell. He'd fit in great with them. He seemed like the right kind of sucker to hang out with the Royals. Anyway, there was also an All-Star game. I feel like this segment is proven to be like a metaphor for how people view the All-Star game versus the interview with the Royal people. And I think, you know what I think also might have happened? They might have underestimated how much black people cared about that. Or did the All-Star game, did they just not know? Like, yo, they gonna put Harry and Meghan against y'all. Oh, we'll be okay. Our fans don't care about, but the girlfriends do. And they ain't one television in some of these places.
Yeah, but I mean, the league calendar is like set out way, way ahead.
No, but remember, there wasn't supposed to be an All-Star game. And then they threw one in. Like, that's why those uniforms look like Pacers uniforms. Because the All-Star game was originally supposed to be in Indianapolis. And then they canceled it. And then they didn't have time to break out new uniforms. And so they were out there looking like they made no sense in those uniforms in Atlanta. But I just want to say this. There was nothing wrong with the NBA having the All-Star game. There was nothing exceptionally risky about the NBA having the All-Star game. You can make the argument that it was greedy, but they're covering losses at this point. They're not like just trying to stack money on top of money. It was reasonable for them to have the game, and I enjoyed it. The three-point contest, the change they made to that was really good. I enjoyed the game itself. I thought that the game was entertaining, even though it was a blowout. I enjoyed the banter between the people who were playing in the game. Like, I thought it was an overall strong event. Shout out to Clark Atlanta University Philharmonic Society performing the national anthem. That's what's up. They often tend to forget that we over there. We out here, baby. We out here. Anyway, all of that was great. But y'all got to get your minds right about, like, what is and isn't COVID risky. Okay? First of all, you correct me if I'm wrong, Gabe. We don't have a positive test yet for Embiid or Simmons, do we?
They're still in contact tracing. Right. So I think it's like unclear as far as if right. they've actually tested.
But the barber tested positive. I'm telling you now, if the barber wore a mask while giving them haircuts, they're good. Like, this has been borne out through this last year that the most important thing about that with a barber, now a barber shop is its own thing, right? But with a barber, the most important thing is the barber being masked. If the barber was masked, they're probably fine. The NBA is on the super duper careful program. And so once they found out about the barber, they pulled these dudes out of the game. But as soon as this happened, you saw all these people that, oh, like end of the world type stuff. That's why this game was such a dumb idea. The rest of the league is not going to Atlanta where they're going to be tested over and over and over again for that weekend. The rest of the league was going wherever the hell the rest of the league goes, back to their mama's house, to Cabo or whatever it was. Those are the people that you need to worry about. Those are the ones that are taking like the risks. Those are the ones that are far more likely to create a situation than the people going to a controlled NBA environment. That was it. But there is just a cottage industry that exists wagging our fingers at people who ain't doing right. And I understand in large part how it is that we got here. And I understand a lot of the frustration that people have who have been very diligent in being safe in this time and why they have their level of frustration with people who are not. I totally get it. But like, stop being an idiot in the name of, and yes, I'm going to call it what it is, virtue signaling. That's really what it comes down to. When you ask people, why shouldn't we have an all-star game? I understand why the players didn't want the all-star game. That wasn't about risk. That was about hassle. They tired of all this, right? And guys going to the all-star game are doing that to bump up the salary cap to get the money for the other dudes who don't have to go do this when they're supposed to get a break and they had been told that there was going to be no all-star game. But wasn't nobody in there like, I don't want to do this because I'm not going to be safe. This is what they're doing all the time. Like, yeah, Atlanta, they wilding out. You're operating on the assumption that these guys would then go hit the streets and wild out themselves. You see what I mean? But the activity itself? Nah, man. This was a reasonable thing for them to do. It's something that I think they should have done if it was possible. And they did. And it doesn't seem like there was really any issue other than an encounter that Simmons and Embiid had before they got to Atlanta. But we are at a point in this where we need to stop. When you evaluate these situations and how safe they are, we got to do better than this simply being a place for us to judge people. Because that's what I think that it, really what the discussions come down to so often is really just, not just judge people, but I feel like you're judging the wrong people very often, right? So the NBA came out when they got down there and they were like, this is a made-for-TV event. That's what they were saying about the All-Star game is, this was a made-for-TV event. That's what Keisha Lance Bottoms, the mayor of Atlanta, said. And people rolled their eyes at that. But it was a made-for-TV event. That was 100% correct. The game is in Atlanta because Turner's in Atlanta, right? Keep them costs down. All right, Turner's in Atlanta. Boom, we got this. They did this to make money to put it on television, right? But what happens as a result? People are going to have parties that are not for All-Star. That's just what you put on the thing. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is the hook. Like, okay, All-Star Game's in town. Let's have a party. You need an excuse to have a party to make it seem like a bigger deal than it is. Okay, cool. I ain't got no beef with party promoters throwing parties. Why? Because what do party promoters do? They throw parties. That is what they do. That is how they make money. I can't knock them for trying to make money. Where you're like, hey, okay, but what about the public health situation? The job of the public health situation is on the government. They're the ones not doing their jobs by allowing all these things to happen. But if you're the party promoter, how else are you supposed to eat? How else are you supposed to make money? That's how it goes. Do I have problems with people who are deciding to go just because it's open? Yes. Do I think those people are selfish and are ignoring the risk of what they are doing? Absolutely. I can't blame the people for opening the doors, though. I just can't. Capitalism did not stop for the virus. I cannot blame the NBA for trying to have as many events as they possibly can. I don't blame them if they can find safe ways to have people in the building for getting people into the building safely. Like, I'm good with all of that. I see a lot of things that just don't look like they're safe. Like when you see people packed into the club like sardines, like now we talk about something different. Like that is, in fact, its own problem. But if you can find a way to do it safe, then I don't blame you for engaging in this activity. And that's how I felt about the All-Star game. And I just think that it was a lot of people who were trying too hard to show and demonstrate themselves how diligent they are, who then want to come out and wag their fingers at these people for doing this without actually using their brains to consider what it is that they are criticizing. And again, in the end, I was surprised at how entertaining the event turned out to be. But I know most of y'all don't know that because y'all were too busy watching an interview. And I certainly can't judge you because I spent more time on my sports podcast talking about that interview than the actual game. All right, Les Miles mutually parted ways with Kansas. Can't say he got fired. Can't say he quit. They mutually parted ways. Now, they mutually parted ways on the heels of reporting that USA Today did. Nancy Armour and some other folks were on it. Les Miles had been behaving in an untoward manner with female students at LSU. He had a condo, his own condo in Baton Rouge, and he apparently was inviting undergrads to come to the condo to hang out with him. It had reached a point in the offices where he was no longer allowed to meet with female student workers alone, that he had come into the office and he had said that we need basically more blondes with big breasts in here to work because recruits are coming. And on that one with Les, they can shut down a whole lot of programs for dudes saying stuff like that. Not saying it's right. I'm just letting you know that that one is more prevalent than I think that you realize. Mike Locksley, who's now the head coach at Maryland, when he was the head coach at New Mexico, he got in trouble. He let go of a secretary at New Mexico because he said that she was too old and that recruits wouldn't like her. And she was like 25 or 26. That world has its own norms that are wildly problematic. And that part, I think, with Les is not so far out of the norms of that world, whether it's right or wrong, just giving you that context. Now, this thing with these students, this is a completely different situation. Like this is bad news. Now, the thing that jumps out more so than the fact that Les was engaging in this behavior is that the athletic director at LSU, a dude named Joe Oliva, wanted to fire Les in 2013. The quote he had is, "In the end, are we going to say it would cost more to keep him than it would cost us to fire him?" But he absolutely thought that Les should have been fired. But the folks at LSU didn't want to do it. And they did all these investigations and managed to keep them quiet for 8 years. Like that to me is maybe the most interesting part here. One, that local media has been stripped down so far that people who live and breathe LSU football would not catch wind that this thing was even going on to be able to put in the request in order to get the information. But for so long. Like that's really where we get to the big part of this story here. You had like some people on the board knew, but some people on the board did not know. Like this wasn't even like really brought to committee. It's like some people found out and they decided to do an investigation. They decided to keep it low. And Oliva looked at it and was like, yo, he's got to go. Now, important context on Joe Oliva is Joe Oliva was the athletic director at Duke when the Duke lacrosse thing went down. And so one of the big things that happened with Duke lacrosse was they fired the lacrosse coach, you know, when this thing happened with the players. Oliva took a lot of hell for that. A lot of people never got over that because they felt like he did the lacrosse coach wrong under those circumstances by firing him. I disagree with that. I've always disagreed with that. It turned out to be, in the end, a bit of a bad break for the lacrosse coach. But the issue at the time was the lacrosse team had been told that their behavior was out of pocket. Like for the longest time had been told that their behavior was out of pocket, and the coach is the person who ultimately was going to have to bear the brunt of responsibility if the lacrosse team kept acting up. And then it looked like they acted up one more time. And to be honest, it does not appear that they sexually assaulted anybody, but they were over there acting up. Like they ain't really no whole lot of question about that. You know, the tell your grandfather thanks for my t-shirt, making a reference to cotton and slavery when the women left the house. You know, like, oh, they were over there acting up. And it was like, yo, if you act up one more time, y'all going, you know, the coach going to get fired. And so the coach wound up getting fired. So I wonder in the LSU situation is if they looked at Oliva as the guy who overreacted at Duke. And therefore, it made it easier for them to dismiss him at Baton Rouge. The other part is people don't like Joe Oliva. And so building up allies and things like that has never been something that he was strong on. But he was right about this. He was 100% right about this. But here's the bottom line. Here's why they didn't fire Les Miles. Because they didn't want to. How many times have I talked about that, Gabe? When I talk about, like, when it comes time to fire somebody, the reason that you get fired is because they want to fire you, right? I saw that Joel Leva tried to get Les Miles fired in 2013. That would be one season and change after they won the SEC and played in the national championship game. That told me that Joel Leva looked at this and was like, guys, this is really, 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 really bad. Like, to even form your lips to say that you would want to fire Les Miles at that point meant that he was way out of pocket. You know, and Aliba's point was, we keep telling him to stop doing this, and he keeps doing it. We're saying, stop calling these women, stop texting these women, stop meeting up with these women, and he won't stop. They just didn't want to fire him. And keep this in mind. Do not forget this. In 2015, we started getting that word that LSU wanted to fire Les Miles. Right? Like reputable columnist in Baton Rouge puts out the story about whether this is it. And they start, whenever you start hearing that they thinking about firing you, you're already fired, basically. And that happened with Les Miles in 2015. They played Texas A&M in the last game of the season in 2015. All right? At home. And it was a very emotional time because people like Les, you know? Very emotional time, very emotional game. They won the game. Rousing standing ovation for him afterward, you know, all that stuff. And they did not fire him. They just didn't want to. They had lost five straight games to Alabama. You think he saved his job by beating Texas A&M? Nah, man. They just didn't want to fire him. That was it. And then the next season, they lost that game to Wisconsin, I want to say at Lambeau Field, and it started slow, and they fired him in the middle of the year. Right? But they didn't fire him just because they didn't want to. All right? Now, let's fast forward to the situation with Kansas. Les got the job, I think, 2 years ago. I don't know if Kansas should have known this about Les Miles. I don't, because, again, it sounds like people in Baton Rouge didn't know about it for 8 years. You know, Ross Dellinger of SI.com, who worked in Baton Rouge at the time, he wrote a story where he blamed himself because he's like, look, I was putting in freedom information requests like every month at that point in my career. And I didn't know to look into this. I don't know what, given the level of secrecy that LSU engaged in to keep this private, I don't know how reasonable it is to expect Kansas and Jeff Long, the athletic director, to have learned about this. I don't know. I do think that after you found out about it, you had to let go of Les because it's been clearly demonstrated. If he did it down there and got away with it, then he's doing it up there. And if he's not doing it up there, it's only because you knew that he had done it down there and you told him not to do it up here. I just don't know whether or not they, quote unquote, should have known. But please understand this. They fired Les Miles because they wanted to. If they had wanted to keep Les Miles, they could have. Like, there's a world of plausible deniability in this for Jeff Long and other people at Kansas. There is, right? I'm not saying it should or shouldn't be. I'm just telling you that, like, if I was a lawyer and I'm looking at their case, I'm looking at it like, how was I supposed to know? Is it my fault that I did not know? You know, all these things. And people will be like, well, Jeff Long hired Bobby Petrino. The concern that people had about hiring Bobby Petrino is that he was going to leave for another job in the middle of the night. They did not think that the problem was going to be him having a relationship with a woman that worked in the office and then wrecking his motorcycle with her on the back. You know, like, I just don't think that those are the same thing. But I don't know if you saw the statements that Les Miles and Jeff Long put out, but it is very clear to me that what got Les Miles fired was going 0-9 last year. Like, the emphasis in that statement was about winning. We are going to win. KU football is going to start winning. That's what they were locked into. Winning. It wasn't nothing about promoting no atmosphere, or nobody admitting no wrongdoing or anything else. Like, there was a statement before when they put Miles on administrative leave that talked about due diligence and all this. But if Les Miles had not gone 0-9 last year, Les Miles still has that job. I thought he would still have that job in spite of being 0-9 and then get fired at the end of the year when they were sorry again. But 0-9 is what got him fired. They fired him because they wanted to. You think Jim Tressel got fired at Ohio State behind him tattoos? Like, he messed up lying to the NCAA. He got fired because they wanted to, because they wanted to raise the ceiling on the program, and they knew that they could get Urban Meyer. When Urban Meyer got caught in that situation with his, Zach Smith, with that assistant, they didn't fire Urban Meyer. And look, there were people who tried, but it got high enough on the chain. And guess what? Those people did not want to fire him. That's it. They didn't want to do it. So unless Miles, you know, it's the end of his career, I'm certain. But please understand, they fired him because they wanted to. They didn't fire him because they were standing for this cause. LSU didn't fire him ultimately because they were standing on a cause. Because think about this for a second. LSU, and I think it's the wildest thing, when they were actually trying to run him out, they could have mentioned some of this, except too many people was caught up in the cover-up. And so they got stuck with him for longer than they wanted him to be there. They fire you when they want to. Why they want to? That could be anything, and sometimes it's not the stuff that matters.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
Today's If You Haven't Heard difference-making stories are brought to you by CarMax. Don't just buy a car, love your car with the new CarMax Love Your Car Guarantee.
All right, Bomani, this first story comes from business.
Hello, this is Derek Johnson from Slate.com, where I'm a designer and resident sneakerhead. And on March 2nd, we published a story called The Absurd Nike Scandal That Has Sneakerheads Losing Their Mind. In essence, it's a story about sneaker reselling. On February 25th, I read a story by Joshua Hunt in Bloomberg Businessweek, where they did a profile on a kid from Portland, Oregon, whose name was Joe Hebert. Joe is a kid who's been reselling sneakers online, buying sneakers at retail price or lower than retail price in some cases, and selling them for a profit. The story follows him as he makes these transactions and also even rents a U-Haul truck to drive to different states, Colorado and Utah, and even back in his own home state of Oregon to purchase sneakers at outlets at discount prices and then reselling them for a profit. He even owns a warehouse in Oregon where he stores all of his stock, and there are photos of him with boxes upon boxes of sneakers, making probably hundreds of thousands of dollars after you add it all up. Joe's really proud of himself and wanted to show the writer Joshua Hunt all of his, you know, revenue and all the work he'd been doing. So he wanted to furnish a credit card statement for him. And he called up Joshua, and the number that he called from was registered to an Ann Hebert. And as any good writer would do, Joshua looked up who Ann Hebert might be, and come to find out that Ann Hebert is the vice president and general manager at Nike North America. And the credit card he furnished was in Ann's name as well, to a West Coast streetwear, the company he'd been reselling these sneakers under. That story published on February 25th, and on March 1st, the following Monday, Nike put out a press release saying that Ann Hebert was stepping down from the company. They basically gave her the boot, no pun intended. And what happened was that circulated around sneaker blogs, and eventually Bloomberg was like, hey guys, we did this story last week about this kid. He basically told on his mom and told on himself. And since then, his company has dissolved, and he hasn't been doing any business since. So I guess that goes to show you, if you're selling sneakers and you have a really good connect or a plug somewhere really high up, especially if it's your mom, an executive at a really, really large sneaker company, the biggest sneaker company in the world, maybe you shouldn't be granting any interviews or showing your face or anything of the sort. Amazing story.
All right. First of all, you know damn well you intended that pun. And number two, this boy is dumb. That is all I have here is this boy is dumb. And what he needed for himself was to show people that he wasn't just doing this because his mama worked at Nike. He was pulling this off because he was smart. That's the only reasonable explanation for this, because people talk about, man, he out here clout chasing. The article's in Bloomberg, right? Okay, it's not like his friends read Bloomberg. You see what I'm saying? Like, his mom's friends, they read Bloomberg. He seemed to be trying to get somebody to understand that he's smart. I can handle things. I'm not like everybody says. I'm not dumb. I'm smart, and I want respect. Like, that's what this was. And he went out here and he messed it up for everybody. And his mom, I don't know if she's dumb, but that was dumb. Like, all of this, like, this is just dumb. Like, it's the only thing I got is this was just dumb from all of them. And now everybody losing. Everybody losing as a result, because these dudes are slaves to the internet and slaves to this attention.
Now they're sitting at the dinner table, unemployed.
Well, imagine dad. If you're dad, I married this dummy and this dummy is like related to me.
They're messing with his money.
You work at Nike. You can't give him a credit card to be involved in reselling shoes. You cannot do that. That just seems to be fairly obvious, right? You cannot do that. Your credit card. And did they say he was using a discount?
Sounds like that's the game that was being played if you're driving around to different places.
Yeah, but if it's her discount, like, God, he's so dumb.
Using the promo code Bulmani.
I'm just amazed at how dumb this dude. I see why at 19 years old, he decided that rather than go study something, he was just going to resell shoes. Because here's one thing about it. If you are not smart, I'm not saying that everyone who resells shoes is not smart. But if you are not smart, reselling shoes is a great idea, right? All I got to do is buy shoes and then sell them to somebody else. And so then he's like, dude, I can use mom's discount. Somebody's like, dude, I don't know if you should. No, but really, I can. Watch. Dummy.
All right. This next story comes from tech.
Hi, my name is Kevin Roos. I'm a writer at the New York Times. And my story is called The Robots Are Coming for Phil in Accounting. The story is basically about the rise of white-collar automation, robots and AI tools that are doing the work that we never thought could be automated, more complex decision-making-based work in fields like accounting, law, finance, medicine, even journalism. These robots have been getting much better, and they're being implemented at a pace that we've never seen before. A lot of that's due to the pandemic and companies trying to make do with less and scale their workforce without hiring more people. So this story is a look at the way that that's happening and playing out across the economy. And it's also about the ways that workers are trying to adapt by developing new kinds of skills and abilities in things that can't be done by machines to try to make themselves more robot-proof in preparing for this AI-filled future.
So let me ask you this. Is this what it's going to take to get white-collar people behind unions? Because think about this. This threat of automation, I think that people view it largely in the context of how it will affect people with, for lack of a better term, limited levels of education. You know what I mean? Like, I think we think about them doing menial tasks, like not just grunt work, but like data entry, you know, like those kinds of things. Like, I think we assume that a lot of this stuff could just be done by humans and it would need to be done by humans. Y'all might need to go get y'all a union. Like, yeah, accountants, y'all might want to go get a union, all this stuff, because they're going to figure out a way to not pay y'all to do all of this stuff. And rather than to figure out within that, well, would we find other things for you guys to do? Nope, we're going to find something else that the robot can do. Like, this could be, the robot could create a level of worker solidarity that we've never had before. Because for the first time ever, the blue collar and the white collar are living under the same threat.
All right, this last story also comes from business.
NBA Top Shot is exploding. And if you need an explainer, here's a super simple way to understand what's going on. NBA Top Shot is a digital marketplace where you can buy, sell, and trade fully licensed NBA highlights called Moments. Think of it like trading cards, but fully digital. Wait, how do I own something digital? Each highlight is numbered and safely encrypted and stored. Once you buy it or get it through purchasing a pack, only you can access it, and you can decide whether to keep it in your digital wallet or sell it on the marketplace. Why is this even making money? Low supply, high demand. The power of the internet. There are a lot of collectors and investors interested in this to cash in or own a piece of what they think will be the future of collecting. In the last week, NBA Top Shot did over $110 million in transaction. This LeBron James highlight sold for $208,000 on Monday. But why would I pay for something that I can watch for free? Why not? The same reason you'd pay for a trading card when you can just find a picture online. I can print the Mona Lisa, but it won't sell for $660 million. So hopefully now you understand what NBA Top Shot is, and you can join me in a line of 30,000 people also not getting the next pack drop. Fun!
No, Arda, I don't understand. That's my man, Arda O'Cal. I used to work with Arda, the scorer in Toronto, by the way. No, I don't understand. I used to collect trading cards when I was younger. But there's like, and maybe this is the part that I'm missing, but there's an art to that. You know, like there's design, there's like the actual photograph, there's all kinds of things that go into what makes a trading card dope. Like the Ken Griffey Jr. card was not simply just because he was Ken Griffey. Like there was something to the picture and everything else. You know, it was like all that stuff. I don't understand what is going on here. other than people deciding we're going to find a way to make people spend money and people being like, yeah, I'm down.
So you mean to tell me that there were people out there that were thinking, you know, if I could just own that highlight?
Well, so this is my guess, is that if you're paying like $208,000 for a LeBron James highlight, because I do remember, I do think the quality that is like trading cards, I mean, obviously these are digital trading cards, but that is interesting, is the roll of the dice of buying a pack. Anything could be in a pack of baseball cards. You know, like you didn't really hit very often when you were buying packs, but it was always something fun about carefully opening that pack and just hoping that you got like one of the super joints, right? I never felt like I used to order, get boxes of them from Sam's, and I never felt like I ever like really came up on my pack purchases.
But isn't like part of the appeal of memorabilia that you can put it on display for people to see, like an art piece?
Yeah, I think there's something to that. I think people just like having them as much as anything else. But I also do think that, yeah, like put them, like all the things that I understand about why people get trading cards don't seem to really be present in the digital space. But what it is like you tell people it's blockchain, you know, that's the rage right now and everybody gets on it. And one thing about this economy right now is like you may have seen people make the point about being fearful about putting out a stimulus package because they were afraid of overheating the economy. And I think a lot of people didn't really understand like what the concept of overheating was. But the thing that matters in this is there are more dollars in this economy than there are physical goods to purchase with those dollars. And so part of what you see happening there is that is in part what is driving up like the value of these cryptocurrencies or even the value of the stock market as it stands right now. What else are you going to spend the money on? Like people don't have something else to spend their money on. And stuff like this is what pops up in that presence. But when like I'm hearing somebody paying $208,000 for LeBron James on this, yo, that's a rich person. Like, so maybe if you can, and I guess maybe that's what the sell of this is, right? Is that if you can luck up and get like the Anthony Edwards dunk in a pack or whatever it is, that there will be some rich person who literally has more money than he can spend, who will then be willing to pay you $200,000+ for this just because they have no other way to spend the money. And that tells you just what a house of mirrors our whole economy is right now, where people got $200,000 to spend on a LeBron James highlight, and damn near everybody I know in real life is broke.
These people are also rich enough to have a TV in their house dedicated to said highlight.
Yes.
And they could just have it playing on loop.
Maybe that's what they do, right? Like this is, I try not to judge people for things that I don't fully understand, but I don't really understand why anybody would do this.
Have you ever watched the game and thought, wow, I didn't know they still played? Well, you're not alone. The Right Time with Bomani Jones asked the question, is he still in the league?
Still in the league time. It's been a while since we've done this. I feel like it's kind of like a semi-annual thing. You can only really do it at the beginning of the season or the middle of the season.
Yeah.
Playoff time, like these guys are out the league, not a part of the collective consciousness.
Right, and lucky for everybody, as I am told, anytime I offer an opinion that people disagree with, I don't watch that much basketball anyway.
Well, the question is, do you watch enough basketball to know whether these guys are still in the league?
Yeah, I know enough basketball. I watch enough basketball to get on TV and talk about it, right? But this the next level. Let's go.
All right. We got 10 today. Number one, Kevin Serafin.
Wow. I am going to say that he is not in the league because he used to play for the Wizards, I recall. And I feel like once the Wizards don't want you no more, there's nowhere to go.
Woo! Kevin Serafin is retired, just retired this past year. Number two, Bobby Portis.
Bobby Portis, he is in the league. He is a Milwaukee Buck.
Two for two.
He still got them hands? Richards ain't never coming back.
Number three, Marco Bellinelli.
Oh, this is an interesting question, because while I do watch basketball, I do not watch the San Antonio Spurs, which is the last place that I saw him. Yeah, he might still be there. I'm going to say yeah.
Marco Bellinelli now playing in Italy.
Oh, he went back to the crib. That happened.
Yeah. Two for three, though. Dwayne Bacon.
Ha ha ha. I'm not sure that he was ever in the league. Like, is this a trick question? I'm going to say still in the league because I never knew he was in the league.
You can't change your answer.
No, I say still in the league. I don't think I've ever heard of Dwayne Bacon. Who does he play for now?
Dwayne Bacon's with the Magic.
Oh, yo, you want to play this game? You want to play this game? Golly's still in the league. Take Vucevic off the list and just ask me about all the Orlando Magic.
Yeah, there are a couple of guys that I'll be interested to see if you've ever heard of. Furkan Korkmaz.
Okay, I think he plays for the Nets. I know he's in the league because I've heard his name, his last name. When you said that first name, you could tell the people, my eyes got big as saucers. I had no idea who that was. Yeah!
Furkan Korkmaz plays for the Philadelphia 76ers.
Oh, the Sixers. There we go. There we go. He's one of those dudes that just becomes a last name in the NBA. Like, that's the thing about them, or the cats that come in from overseas. You are a last name. Once we learn to say that, we give up.
Man, you're really hitting me for a lick today. God.
Yeah.
Next, Ante Zizic.
I believe he plays for the Pelicans, but I do know he's in the league. Oh, he's not in the league?
Plays in Israel.
I wonder who I'm confusing him with.
For you, you're having a little trouble with the Euros. That's what it is. Yeah. But your knowledge of, like, you know, these deep bench players is actually not as bad as one would imagine.
By the way, if you did not know, Israel is often a sought-after destination for guys going overseas because they speak English over there.
And the thing is also about Maccabi Tel Aviv, which is where a lot of these guys go to play for Israel, is that it's in the EuroLeague. You know, which is kind of an interesting thing, and not to, like, sidetrack us.
Nah, it's what you think it is. My understanding is that their more nearby nations don't play against them.
You would assume correct with that.
Yeah, nah. I don't think it'd be a good idea for Israel to play a lot of, like close away games. They need to go, you know, they need to go away.
I mean, Israel also participates in Eurovision, I think. I'm not, like, 100% correct on that.
Yeah, Europe is not a continent. It's a state of mind.
All right. Getting back to business here. Chris Dunn.
I hope he's in the league.
Is that a hope or is that an answer?
I'm going to ride out my hope. Yes.
Whew. Plays for the Atlanta Hawks.
Another way for me to forget you're in the league because I didn't have any actual knowledge of this. I just felt like that man overcame too much to be out the league already. Damn.
When I saw his name on the Hawks roster, I was just like, I'm just glad that he's got a home.
Man, he's one of them dudes that we would do them Dan Le Batard heart-wrenching interviews with or highly questionable. I'm like, damn, dog, y'all had it rough.
Next, Evan Turner.
He should still be in the league. He's not that old. I'm going to say yes. Oh!
Evan Turner's retired, taking a position on the Celtics coaching staff.
I had no idea.
Two to go. So far, you are 5 correct and 3 wrong. So there's still the opportunity for us to be on even playing field here. The odds are in your favor going into these last.
You sure it's not 6-2?
You got Zizic, Evan Turner, and Bellinelli wrong.
Oh, I got you. 6-2, let's go.
Okay. Thanasis Antetokounmpo.
Oh, yeah. He is in the league, and is he the one playing with his brother or the one with the Lakers? But he's in the league.
Man, that was going to be my thing. Whether or not you were going to get the right brother right, because there are two of them. You're right. There's one, Thanasis plays for the Bucks, and then the other brother plays for the potential future home of Giannis Antetokounmpo, the Los Angeles Lakers.
I would just like to note that Giannis is becoming NFL Gronk, dragging these not as good brothers along with him.
Oh my gosh. Last one. Can I save some face here? Mario Hezonja.
I always enjoy watching him play, even though he is clearly not good at this. It's just fun to watch. And he's in the league. I'm going to say it. He's in the league. Oh,
another Euro step on you. Hezonja's over in Greece right now. So
see, that's the problem, man. They be giving up. You know what I'm saying? They be going back to what's comfortable. They don't want to live this American dream, and they be messing me up in this game.
It's a sore spot for you. It's a sore spot.
Yeah, it happens.
6-4, not bad.
That's right. That'll give me about a 4 or 5 seed in the playoffs. I appreciate that. But hey, ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. You do this here a couple times a week. My man Gabe Bassain handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Also, thank you to CarMax. Thank you to our If You Haven't Heard contributors. Thanks to Derek Johnson at Slate. Check out his story on a ridiculous sneaker scandal that is rocking the industry at Slate.com. Thanks to Kevin Ruse in the New York Times. Check out his story on robots coming for your white-collar jobs at NewYorkTimes.com. And thanks to Arda Ocal for his explainer on NBA Top Shot. There's also a story by Brian Windhorst you can check out at ESPN.com to try to make sense of that. Remember, subscribe at the right time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater, and we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.